In your book, Finding Francis, the main character has contracted emphysema from a lifetime of smoking and is nearing the end of her life, a prospect which she finds terribly frightening. I mean, how similar is this to what you experienced with your mother at the end of her life?
Well, Francis, as in Finding Francis, the name of the book, is Francis is a 71-year-old woman who is coming to terms with the end of her life. And when my mother died 7 years ago this month, she was ready. She was sick, but the medical system wanted to keep her alive. When you go to the hospital, hospitals are for healing. And my mother asked me if I would help her die. I wanted to write a book about the profound experience that I had while my mother was dying. And Frances is a little bit like her, but I think that this story is about death with a capital D. It's not a memoir.
You've written that death has replaced sex as the next taboo. Could you elaborate what you mean by that?
Well, when I told people I was writing a book about death, they sort of take a step backwards. I felt nobody wanted to talk about that. I mean, we can talk about sex with anybody now. You read it in the newspapers, kids see it on television. But death, maybe not so much. So I wanted to kind of cross that line a little bit, get people talking, start the conversation, because I think once the conversation is started, people do want to talk about it. They just don't have anyone to talk to.
And who do they talk to about this? You said this is a taboo subject. Who would you recommend people talk to in an end-of-life situation where they really need some comforting advice?
Actually, I would suggest that they start talking about death and dying way before it's time. I don't think anybody's too young or too old to have what I call the conversation. And the conversation involves, how do I want to die? What kind of medical treatment would I like? Would I want to try everything at the end of my life, or will I want a more natural death and let nature take its course? Everyone has different feelings about this, and I find that my book, because it's fiction, people may be uncomfortable talking about their own death, but they find a way to relate to a character. I think when we hear about someone else's death, we know how we feel about it. We say, oh, it was a blessing, or it was a shame he had to suffer so much, or, yeah, that's the way I want to go. People do have opinions, and if they could start by talking to their closest loved ones and family, that is the most important conversation they could have.
Now, a lot of directives that are written out beforehand aren't honored by the caregivers. Why is that? Are people scared of the consequences, or have they really failed to discuss this beforehand and aren't emotionally equipped to carry out end-of-life directives?
I think that it's a combination of all of those things. And remember, if you have to make a decision for someone else or participate in that decision, you can't get it wrong. You have to feel that you made the right decision. And again, that's why these conversations ahead of time are so important, because I think that we can show our loved ones how much we care about them by respecting their wishes. Our own grief, our own guilt over that decision really needs to come secondary. I think it is good for the heart, it's good for the soul, to be able to look back, and like I can, and say, my mother had a good death. That's what she wanted. That's the way she lived the way she wanted to live, and she died the way she wanted to die.
Janice, did your mother have a living will, and did you honor that?
My mother did have a living will. However, it wasn't legal because she hadn't followed the proper forms. Every state is different, and they have different requirements about whether you need it notarized, who needs to witness it. So it's important that everyone understand exactly what they have to do to have the best chance of having their wishes honored. But honestly, sometimes, in addition to the conflicting interests within a family, you also have the conflicting value systems of the doctors and the other people in the medical system. For example, when my mother was dying and she told the doctors what she wanted, she was still able to speak for herself. The doctor took me aside and said, I wouldn't let my mother do that, as if I had a choice of letting or not letting my mother have the death that she had desired.
Did you have any second thoughts at that time? I mean, nobody's really emotionally prepared for this. Did you think maybe she wasn't in her right mind when she wrote this living will, so maybe I shouldn't honor it and keep her alive as long as possible?
Yeah, I think the question comes down to, when is a person dying? Is it when they first contract the illness and without intervention they would die? Or is it after you've tried everything humanly possible, even though the person might die while trying some of those treatments? That, I think, is where we all struggle. And the doctors kept saying to me, your mother's not dying yet, meaning that they had one more thing they could try, even though she might die on the table or she might be on life support for the rest of her life without any quality of life, which was her number one goal. And I think that, again, it is a terminal decision that you make, and I felt a lot of guilt, and I've talked to doctors who say that sometimes they feel guilty because they didn't think of the one thing that they still had yet to try in time to try it. So we are all human. There's a lot of emotion that goes into this. There are ethics. There are the roles that we play in our family and the roles that people play in the medical system. And then finally, there's that process of how a person dies, how a body shuts down, what the process is, and whether or not we interrupt it or prolong it by some of the interventions that we do. So I felt a lot of guilt, and that really is what caused me to do research and to get involved in the cause of having the conversation and of course, in writing my book that I hope will start the conversation.
The Terri Schiavo case really cast this into the national eye. Do you think something good came out of the Schiavo case in terms of bringing it out of the closet, really?
I think that the Terri Schiavo situation was indeed a tragedy. Anytime a young person goes before their time, it's a tragedy. But to me, the real tragedy is that both her parents and her husband thought that they knew what she wanted, and one of them was terribly wrong. And at the time, I thought, I don't know who's doing the right thing, but I only know I never want that to happen to me. So at that point, I contacted a local organization called Project Grace, which is part of Suncoast Hospice over in Pinellas County, and they helped me prepare my advanced care directive and my healthcare surrogate forms so that it would never happen to me. And I had the conversation with my family, and I encouraged my 22-year-old daughter to have the conversation with me and her husband so that we were prepared. So if something came good out of it, maybe there were other people like me who realized the importance and began to understand how important this conversation is, how important the legal documents are to have in place, regardless of how old you are. You think about it once, you fill out the forms, then you put it away and hope you'll never need it.
Janice, thanks for your help.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.